Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered. Like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches. But there aren't, right?
Right. Because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
Hey guys, it's Elena.
And it's Candace.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime.
Welcome back to the show. What do you got going on today, Lena?
All kinds of things. Work, trying to get prepared for our senior night tomorrow at church.
Is that senior citizen? Because
no.
you didn't invite me.
Right? I know. I'm sorry.
Rude.
Sorry you're finding out like this. No, it's for the senior graduates.
Oh.
So we're celebrating them at church, and I have to put some speeches together.
Oh,
so.
Well, better get on that.
Yeah, I was trying. So work that, making sure my story's ready for today. So
exactly. It's not like you're doing anything. I mean, just stop acting like you're so busy.
I know. Gaw. It's all a ruse.
Gaw. Well, I don't know what to say.
Yeah. Have you had any sleep?
I don't even know what day it is, actually. No.
I'm surprised you actually made it over here.
I know. It's been a wild time. It's been a wild time since we last dropped our last episode. My other twin has had surgery.
Mm-hmm.
She had one hip operated on.
Yeah.
And so now I have two-year-olds in spica casts, and it's insanity. Just really is. I mean, I don't regret doing them at the same time. I think logistically it makes sense. It's all hard. Hard. But it was like,
do this longer?
Exactly. Or that's the thing, mm-hmm. is once Poppy gets her cast off, it was like, then it would be Daisy's turn and we're kind of starting all over again.
Right.
And that just felt like too much.
Yeah.
So I was like, let me kill myself now and break my neck now. And maybe I'll come out the other end. But I don't know if I could handle literally
another
6 months of it. Because they're each in their casts for 12 weeks each.
Right.
So they're not sleeping well.
So you're not sleeping well.
I'm not sleeping at all. I mean, I'm able to like nap.
Yeah,
because they're not going to school. So I am able to nap during the day when they're napping. Funnily enough, they nap fine. But
because they need it, because they're not sleeping at night.
Exactly. They're so exhausted from being up all night in a rager.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it's
you'll get through it. And I mean, Poppy's just halfway through?
She is halfway through her first cast.
Okay.
So at 6 weeks, they get a cast change. She had both hips operated on. So she has a cast that goes from her chest all the way down to her ankles on both legs. She is exceedingly angry about it.
As anybody would be angry.
And so in just a few weeks at the end of the month, she will be able to get a short cast. And it'll be like shorts.
Yeah.
So she'll be able to bend her knees.
No.
And I think that will make a world of difference for her. But she'll be in that for another 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And
Daisy won't have to get another cast.
She will.
She will.
Yeah, she will, because she has
the
reason
leg.
For the cast change is really to
the stitches
do another surgery, because they have, Poppy has both legs.
That's right.
Pins and screws in her
femurs. That's right. I forgot you told me that.
Yeah. So It's to take that out and then a new cast because they do get gross. I mean, there's like diaper changes and like, I don't even, just, you know, you're envisioning.
Use your imagination.
So yeah, it's, oh man. Yeah. So I don't know. I find myself without words.
and then after all that, you get to do potty training.
Yeah, it doesn't end, like the insanity. I'm actually like, I'm not worried about potty training them for some reason because they talk about it a lot.
Oh, okay. And they see Big Sister doing it.
And all these stupid videos on YouTube that have like baby shark pooping different colors. Yeah. And I'm just like, why? Why are these a thing? But yesterday one came on because I'm just like surviving on YouTube right now. Like, just watch YouTube. You're in a cast. You can't move. I don't know what to do for you. Yeah. Like, there's only so much drawing and coloring and yeah, like playing with toys on their little tray. Yeah. So Baby Shark, or one of the characters, was pooping all these different poops. Like, there were different shapes, different colors.
Oh, okay.
And Hazel looked at Daisy and goes, I want to poop that much. And Daisy said, yeah, I want to poop that much. I want to poop the pink one.
Okay.
And I thought, you know what? It's an open conversation. We're talking about it. You know, everybody poops. Yeah. So maybe it serves its purpose, but just don't know.
Did you not say you do poop that much? Yeah. Or
well, it was like a little kiddie pool.
Okay.
So full of like all these poops. So yeah. Anyway, it was just, I don't understand. Well,
that's interesting.
But yeah, I think that the potty training might be the easier part.
Yeah. They make it exciting to go potty, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. And we can do it together. That's the other thing. They have to be potty trained before they go to school next year.
Oh, yeah.
And so getting their casts done and over with so that we can potty train them in time for school. Mm-hmm. That was the idea. And just so we can get on with our lives. Anyway, it's... I don't know what to do. Like, it hurts me because...
Are they screaming? Is there an itch?
Exactly. Like, am I perceiving that they're in pain when really they're itching or uncomfortable? And so anyway, I don't know what, and they can't tell me. I mean, they can tell me. They're just like, it's my knee. My knee hurts. But
yeah,
their knee wasn't operated on. It's just stuck in that position. So it's like, are they having a muscle spasm? Can they... You know, is their knee hurting really? Because it's just stiff like there.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Alcohol, drugs, rock and roll.
No. I mean, we're about to talk about alcohol and drugs.
Well, I planned the segue. There you go. I've introduced your story.
Thank you for that, Candace. Okay. I'm going to tell you about 8 different people.
Wow.
A few more, but the most important ones, there's 8 here. So this is in perspective of the year 2008.
Okay. So I remember the time.
Mm-hmm. I should have looked up like what was happening back then, because I don't remember.
You don't remember 2008?
That was a long time ago.
I moved away to Florida.
Oh, that was the year?
That was the year.
Oh, yeah. Let's not talk about it. So the first one up is Russell Reed. Russell was 93 years old. He farmed for many years in Hopkins Township, Illinois. Russell was born September 11th, 1914.
Wow.
In Stansley, Alberta, Canada. He was the son of Charles F. and Etta Reed. He married Evelyn Price on March 9th, 1939 in Sterling, Illinois. And he had 2 sons, Lyle and Donald. He had several grandchildren and great-grandchildren. He was a member of Wesley United Methodist Church. Almost every morning, Russell would go to the local restaurant and eat breakfast.
Oh, bless him.
I know.
Is it JR's?
Yeah. Sometimes when I see old people sitting by themselves, I just want to go sit with them and have a conversation. Like, I want to go sit with Russell and listen to the stories he could tell. You know, he probably had quite a few. But the elderly really, they have a special place in my heart.
Yeah.
But yeah, we could learn a thing or two from him. The next one is Ronald Randall. Russell Reed, Ronald Randall.
I was about to say, the alliteration is...
Yes. He was 65 years old in 2008. He lived in Galesburg, Illinois. He was born April 27th, 1943, near Avon in Greenbush Township. He was the son of Walter and Margaret Randall. His family and friends called him Ronnie.
No.
He married Mary Mozingo in Galesburg on December 31st, 1973. He had a daughter, Carrie. He had four brothers and three sisters and four grandchildren. He served in the U.S. Army Artillery. He worked the Roe Manufacturing, or he worked for Roe Manufacturing for 10 years. And he later worked as a material handler for Maytag Corporation for 30 years, a little over 30, almost 31 years. And he retired in 2004. So 2004, he was 4 years into retirement.
Mm-hmm. Deserved it after all that hard labor.
Yeah. He was a member of the IAMA, which I believe stands for International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers.
Wow.
Thank you. Give me a round of applause for saying that. he was the MVP for the Paintball Association.
Amazing.
He was an avid Dallas Cowboys fan.
Okay.
Yes, he sounds like a really great guy. The next up is Brock Branson.
What? Stop it. Lena, you're making this up.
RR. BB. Yeah. I mean, it does sound like something I could make up, right?
Is this a serial killer who chooses people that have the same initial?
That's what it sounds like.
All right.
Yeah.
Carry on.
So in 2008, he was 29 years old and from Rock Falls, Illinois. He was born October 16th, 1978 in Sterling, Illinois. He was the son of Dallas and Connie Branson. He enjoyed fishing, boating, listening to music, and traveling in the mountains. He had a daughter. He lived life as if today was today and tomorrow is tomorrow, like just live in the moment kind of guy. He worked for Cindy's Trucking for 5 years. On one of those long haul trips that he made for Cindy's Trucking, he stopped in a Subway store. You know, the ones that are inside of the Love's gas station.
Oh, okay.
It was in Cedar City, Utah. And this is where he met the girl he wanted to marry.
All right. What a meet cute.
Yes. So her name is Kylena Blake. I think I'm saying that right. Kylena. So Kylena Blake, she's next on the list. She, in 2008, was 20 years old. She took Brock's order that day that they met and made him a sandwich, and they just hit it off.
That's so cute.
I know. They had a long distance relationship, but it wasn't long, and she had decided to move into an apartment with Brock in Rock Falls, Illinois. She was fun, outgoing, and she loved music. She had a son from a previous relationship. She named him Diane Blake.
Okay.
And I think I'm saying that right, Diane. And he's next on the list.
No. Oh, Lord Jesus.
Yeah. Dian was 2 years old. He was always running around and never sat down. He was just a fun and happy boy. And this reminds me of my oldest nephew when he was that age, that kid.
Sounds like a 2-year-old boy.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Always running, always laughing. So the three of them, Brock, Kailina, and Dian, shared an apartment with the next guy on the list, Kenneth Yulvi. Kenneth was 25 years old. He was born April 13th, 1983 in Sterling, Illinois. He was the son of Kenneth and Justina Yulvi. He had three sisters and three brothers, and he had a son and led a typical life, one that revolved around working hard and spending time with family. He worked for Terry Ratliff Construction as a roofer for 4.5 years.
Important job.
Yeah. Always got work to do with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
He was always grinning and happy and good-natured. He liked to play disc golf. He always liked to watch baseball and football. He earned his nickname Cookie Cutter while playing football in high school.
All right.
Yeah, they called him Cookie. Next, I want to tell y'all about Jill Estes. She was born March 13th, 1954, born to Edward and Isabel Weber in St. Louis, Missouri. She married her husband Tom in May 26th, 1973. They had been together since high school, and they eventually moved to Sherwood, Arkansas.
Okay.
She worked as a special needs elementary teacher.
Oh, bless her.
I know. What a sweet and beautiful soul, right?
Exactly.
Takes a special person.
Absolutely.
So Tom Estes, who she was married to, he was born December 28th, 1953 in St. Louis, Missouri. He carried on a family tradition working for over 30 years for Union Pacific Railroad. He was respected by all who knew him, and he was known as one who kept everything in working order. And just known to be very helpful. If someone needed something fixed, he was there. Sounds like my dad.
Yeah.
He showed his love by taking care of his family. Tom would find an answer to any question and carry any task through to completion. A simple man, but his technical knowledge and expertise were surpassed by few. Jill and Tom had a son and a daughter together, as well as a grandson. So each of these persons that I mentioned have something in common. I'm sure you already know if you're putting some two and two together. And this brings me to the point in the story where I tell you about a ninth person who is the villain in this tragic case. His name is Nicholas Sheely, and he murdered each one of them when he went on a killing spree.
Oof.
Nicholas was the oldest of three children. He had a bad temper, and he was a kid that got into fights at school. He ended up dropping out of school before he reached ninth grade.
You don't say.
He started drinking alcohol at a young age, like 8 years old or something like that. At 11 years old, he started his criminal career and went to jail for his first time.
Wow.
Through the years, he would be in and out of jail, mostly for drug possession, domestic battery, robbery, and weapon charges. At 16, he became a father, and he seemed to try to get his act right. He eventually earned his GED and got married to the mother of the baby. They went on to have a second baby, but the relationship did not work out.
Wait a minute. The second baby didn't fix the relationship?
Right?
The first baby didn't?
Mm-mm.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
yeah, so it was an abusive and volatile relationship. Of course, a baby's not going to help that.
Lord. Just bring another baby into the world into that mess.
Yeah. Sounds like a great idea.
Yeah.
Nicholas started his drug use back up. You know, I'm sure he never stopped. I don't know, but in 1999, he was sentenced to prison for 90 days. He got out and went right back in 2000 for aggravated battery and sentenced to 6 years. Monica, his wife, filed a restraining order and filed for divorce in 2001 while he was in prison. In 2004, he met Holly Gall. It's reported that they met while he was in prison. The two of them were both inmates at the county jail.
I don't believe this. Wow.
Mm-hmm. A match made in heaven.
I mean.
Yeah, so the county jail in Oregon, Illinois. Not to be confused with Oregon State, okay? He did his time and got out of jail, and in 2006... he is arrested again. But eventually those charges were dismissed. Oh, I don't know what the charges were, why they were dismissed. I don't know. 2007, he did another home invasion with a weapon and was arrested. And eventually those charges were dismissed.
This is ridiculous. And I'm getting mad now, Lena, because this is what we see all the time.
Yes.
A career criminal.
Yes.
Repeat offender. Mm-hmm. They do not care.
Yeah. Dismiss. Check it off.
They are not persuaded by jail time.
Mm-mm. So how do we stop this behavior? So now that your blood is boiling.
I'm boiling over here.
So, yeah, we see that this career criminal was given lots of chances.
Mm-hmm.
Nicholas and Holly eventually married in 2008. The two of them had two children together.
Just please go get a vasectomy. Like, stop having babies.
Yeah.
Lord.
Holly also had had kids from a previous relationship. So all kinds of kids.
There's kids be running around.
Yeah. So this relationship, if you can imagine, was volatile, just like the other ones. Yeah. They were always broke. And they did not trust each other. They were constantly blaming each other for cheating on each other. At one point, Nicholas claimed that he was really trying to get his life right and attending church. But he said, I just keep making bad choices.
Well, yeah.
June 14th of 2008, Nicholas went to an elderly woman's home in Sterling, Illinois, and forced her to write him a check and stole cash and credit cards. And with that, he then went to buy drugs. Holly and Nicholas came to a point where they had to move out of their apartment, and the only place they had to go was Holly's mom's trailer home. Holly's mother agreed to let them live there as long as they did not do drugs or drink alcohol. Nicholas did his best to show that he could be the man of the house. He mowed the lawn.
Oh, good for you. Yeah.
So it didn't last long, though. The two of them found a way to make some money. They got a loan on their Cadillac and I think it was like $1,000. With that money, they went and got the drugs that they needed.
Okay.
Again, drugs, yeah. drugs. You know, yeah. That's why you have money.
Why save money for, I don't know, a home or, you know, reliable transportation so you can have a job? Yeah. I don't know.
Maybe because somebody else will let you live in their trailer home for free.
Mooch.
On June 23rd, Nicholas and Holly got into yet another fight, and he was accusing her of cheating. Previously, when Nicholas was in jail and Holly would come visit him, Holly met a guy named Brock Branson.
Oh, no.
I read that they met when they were both in the visitor's lobby waiting to see their loved ones. So Holly was there seeing Nicholas and Brock. I don't know who Brock was there seeing, but that's where they met. Then mm-hmm. they had a little thing. I don't know. That's alleged.
Right.
So Nicholas accused her of having an affair with Brock in the past, but Nicholas just he couldn't get over it. Nicholas left the house in the car in a drug-filled rage. A few days later, Lyle Reed, Russell Reed's son, called the police on June 26, 2008. Lyle told police that his father, Russell, hadn't picked up his mail or newspaper in the last couple of days. No one had heard from him, and his car was missing. Police went to do a wellness check. Russell's Buick was, in fact, missing, but there was a Cadillac parked in the back.
Wow.
This Cadillac was registered to a man named Nicholas Sheely.
They always park their car. Why?
Well, why did he's they not do in it? His right mind.
Okay.
Nicholas was not known to the family. However, Holly would later confirm that Russell had previously let the two of them take scrap metal from his farm to sell. So on June 23rd, when Nicholas was in his rage, he went to Russell's home in Sterling, Illinois, and broke in. His plan was to rob the place and anything of value so that he could sell it and get money for drugs.
Mm.
Later that afternoon, detectives made their way to 1732 Griswold Road in Sterling, Illinois. This address was the house of Nicholas's brother's girlfriend. When they arrived, they found Russell's Buick on the property.
Okay.
During the search of the car, they found Russell's body.
Oh, no.
He was found in the trunk of his Buick.
Oh, God. I hate that.
He had 18 wounds on and around his head, neck, and chest. This girlfriend of Nicholas's brother, her name is Jenna. She was questioned and said she knew nothing about the Buick or the man inside. She said that she and a man named Eric, Nicholas, and her boyfriend Joshua, they all drove to Chicago, not in the Buick. They took another vehicle. She knew that they were going to Chicago to sell stolen guns, but the men told her not to ask any questions.
Okay, just get in the car, but don't ask questions.
When they got to Chicago, she witnessed Nicholas dumping his shoes in a dumpster, and he went to buy new ones. Why'd you have to get rid of
your
shoes?
Don't ask questions, though.
No. Keep your mouth shut. After getting their business taken care of in Chicago, Nicholas went off on his own, and they separated ways. And Nicholas would end up stealing a truck and driving 3 hours southwest of Galesburg, Illinois. He's just on a trip.
Yeah.
So who, what, and where did he steal this truck from? This brings us to Ronald Randall's part of the story. Ronald was reported missing along with his dark gray Chevy Silverado in Galesburg, Illinois. OnStar was contacted and the truck was located in St. Louis, Missouri. What detectives found and determined was that Ronald was cleaning his truck at a self-serve car wash.
Oh no, not this again.
Mm-hmm. Nicholas saw his opportunity when Ronald was leaning into his truck to vacuum the inside. Nicholas attacked him and beat him to death.
Why couldn't he have just pushed him aside and taken his truck?
Right.
Like, why'd you have to beat him to death first?
Just
take his truck.
Right. Well, and one man was talking on a news report, and he's like, this guy, I know this guy, and he's like, he doesn't just say, hey, yeah. And you know, he's, if he wants to kill you, he's going to like, I'm like, okay, he's
exactly
ask questions later kind of guy.
Yeah.
But he put the body in the bed of the truck and took him and put the body behind a dumpster behind a supermarket. Employees at the supermarket did see the body there, but thought the man was just drunk.
Oh, and my God. They didn't check on him?
After 2 days is when they called the police.
What? Why wouldn't you call and say there's a drunk man by the dumpster?
Right. Was this a normal thing?
Oh, my Lord.
But, you know, I've been in a situation where my coworkers and I saw a man sleeping behind our office building. But we did go and approach him mm-hmm. to check on him. And when we got close, he moved his leg and he opened his eye and looked at us like, what do you want? So we're like, okay, we'll just keep walking.
Just making sure you're alive, sir.
Yeah. So, anyway, inside the cab of Randall's truck, in the bed of the truck, detectives found large portions of blood. Also in the bed of the truck was a woman's flip-flop and 2 teeth.
Oh, my Lord. Hmm. That's wild that the flip-flop stayed in the back of the truck.
Right. A woman's flip-flop.
Weird.
Mm-hmm. On June 30th, an emergency call was made to police to report 4 people that had that were deceased in an apartment.
Oh my.
At 1201 Avenue A in Rock Falls, Illinois. Each body was determined to have blunt force trauma to the head. It was determined that they were beaten with a hammer.
Oh my God.
Neighbors came forward and told police that they heard commotion from the apartment around 11 p.m. or midnight on June 28th. So on June 30th, when Brock's father hadn't received his normal phone call from Brock, he decided to go to the apartment and check on him. He opened the door but noticed something against the door, which was determined to be Kenneth Yulvey's body. Mm. He peeked in, he peeked his head inside and saw Kai. He called her Kai, Kylena.
Mm-hmm.
He saw her in the living room and she was clearly deceased with blood all over her. And he called out for Brock, no answer. He peeked in a little further and that's when he saw his son, Brock, in the same way. He immediately shut the door and ran downstairs to his wife, who was in the truck still, and he told her, they're all gone. They're all dead.
God, that's horrifying.
And she was like, no, they're not.
She's like what? We just came over here to I don't know.
Yeah.
Wow. All
right. And then he called the police. So Nicholas took Randall's truck and drove back to Rock Falls. And this is when he went to Brock Branson's apartment and took the lives of the 4 of them there. It was brought to light that when he got to Brock's, Kenneth answered the door. He was immediately attacked and killed. He then changed into some of Brock's clothes. Brock and Kylena and Diane they weren't home. So he kills Kenneth.
Wow.
He changes his clothes and he sits and he waits.
Wow.
When Brock arrived with Kai and Diane, he attacked and killed each one of them. Later that same morning on June 30th at 11:15 a.m., Thomas and Jill Estes were found behind a dumpster in Festus, Missouri. They went to Missouri for a graduation party. Remember, I said they lived in Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
So they were visiting. When the two of them arrived at the hotel that they were staying at and were getting out of their car, Nicholas attacked and killed them.
Jesus.
Yeah. I don't think he took... I don't know what he took of theirs. Credit cards, I don't know. But, I mean, he left the car. He was still in...
That was just for...
Yeah, he was still in the other truck that he stole.
Good Lord.
So Terry Engel, an old friend of Nicholas's, lived in Festus. She had written letters to Nicholas while he was in prison, as she heard that he was struggling and wanted to encourage him and be a friend. Nicholas still had her address from these letters, and he decided he wanted to see Terry.
Yeah.
Or who knows really what his intentions were with her. But so he arrived at Terry's house, but she was not home. As he went driving around looking for her, he saw,
I'll just drive around.
Yeah.
I mean, she's bound to be around here somewhere.
This is when he saw Tom and Jill, and that's when he robs them and kills them. He leaves their bodies behind the gas station. People at the hotel in Festus, Missouri, noticed a couple of dogs roaming around near the parking lot of the hotel, completely covered in blood.
Oh my gosh, that's horrifying.
Yeah, these dogs were Jill and Tom's dogs that they had brought with them on the trip.
Oh.
The police immediately got into action. They followed the blood trail. Apparently there was a blood trail that led them to their bodies. July 1st, 2008, Nicholas went to Bendy's Bar in Granite City, Illinois. So he's back in Illinois.
Okay.
And
gotten killing out of his system?
For now.
For now.
Mm-hmm. Those were the last victims I have to tell you about. But he was at Bendy's Bar, and the customers there recognized him. His face had been plastered all over the news.
Ooh.
As a suspect in all of these Yikes. Murders. The customers called police. They're like, hey, we got your guy.
They're like, better come quick.
Yeah. So by the time police located Nicholas, he was walking in the parking lot, and he surrendered without resistance. Prosecutors have said he started his rampage because he believed Brock Branson was having an affair with his wife. One witness told police that Nicholas and Brock had argued about drugs in the past. So there were two motives, but pieces of evidence that helped the cases were the clothing that Nicholas was wearing when he killed Randall, was found in Brock's apartment. Remember, he changed his clothes there. He was also seen wearing the clothing in CCTV and seen by witnesses.
Goodness gracious.
Amber Gonzalez is the wife of Nicholas's friend. She would later testify about the night that he came over. She heard a knock on the door. She looked out the window and saw Nicholas. Her husband answered the door and invited him in. She was sitting on the couch in the living room when he walked in and noticed that he had blood on his jean shorts. He made a joke that he had just killed somebody.
That's so funny.
Yeah. And then he said, I'm just joking. I've been fishing all day and I was gutting fish.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be like, ooh, then get out.
Yeah.
Like, go change your clothes.
Yeah. He had not a care in the world that he had people's blood on him. A gas station clerk testified about seeing Nicholas come into the gas station and he bought beer and cigarettes, and he had blood on his shirt and jean shorts. So he's just like there and all, whatever. He didn't care. Nicholas's DNA was found on a cigarette butt in Russell Reed's kitchen. A year into the investigation, when finding Holly's DNA in Randall's truck, Holly confessed that Nicholas had come to pick her up after the murders in Brock's apartment. Now, Holly says that it was dark outside when he picked her up, so she didn't realize till later into the drive that there was blood all over the inside of the truck. She felt her butt was wet and cold. When she put her hands down to check it out, she saw blood. She stopped along their drive, or they stopped along their drive and had sex.
As you do.
Yeah. Hence the flip-flop in the back of
She's like, oh, there's blood all over me.
Right.
I'm so turned on right now.
Well, she claims that she just went along with Nicholas on the drive because she was afraid and wanted to keep the peace.
Right. Right, 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 right.
Yeah. She was later granted immunity for cooperating.
That old chestnut.
Yeah. Before going to trial, he had to go through a neurophysiological test to confirm if he would be fit for trial. His diagnosis was that he was an extreme narcissist with delusions of grandeur, paranoia, antisocial, and mixed personality disorder, along with drug-related impairments. But he was deemed fit for trial. Nicholas went through four trials to account for all of the murders. September 2011, he was found guilty for the murder of Ronald Randall. In November of 2011, he was found guilty for the burglary and murder of Russell Reed. May 29th, 2014, he was found guilty for the four murders of Brock Branson, Kylena Blake, Diane Blake, and Kenneth Yulvey. He was extradited to Missouri to stand trial for the murders of Tom and Jill Estes, but before going to trial, he confessed and pled guilty. During that last sentencing, he wrote a 14-page letter to the court, and he got on his knees and he begged for the family's forgiveness. He apologized to law enforcement, journalists, and anyone else affected by his crimes. He's serving life in prison without the possibility of parole. And just another little tidbit, the last thing I'll leave you with in this case. In November of 2019, both of Nicholas's parents were arrested. His mother, Deborah, was charged with child endangerment. His father, James, was charged with four counts of predatory criminal sexual assault of a child.
Gross.
James had repeatedly assaulted an 8-year-old child. Deborah knew about it and never did anything about it.
Burner at the stake.
Yeah. So I feel like this is a glimpse into the kind of upbringing Nicholas had, but still doesn't excuse
exactly
his actions.
Well, I don't forgive you because you had a choice every single time. Every single action. You know, we talk about premeditation.
Right.
Is the instant you choose.
Right.
Shooting a gun, even if you're shooting out of anger, you have a moment to take that moment, not pull the trigger, and not kill the person.
Right.
He had thousands of moments.
He did.
He acted each step out.
Yeah, absolutely. I've never experienced drugs on a level of where you're just completely out of your mind and you're just going on a rage. I've never experienced that. The first mistake he made was putting drugs into his body.
Well, that's the thing. You take accountability for your actions. He chose to do that,
right.
When you want to alter your state, I mean, that does not negate the consequences of your actions just because, I was taking drugs. I was on drugs. I don't know what I was doing.
Right. But you chose to do that, knowing that it alters your mind.
Yeah, and he was very experienced with drugs.
For sure.
So he knew exactly.
I mean, it's an addiction, and it's hard to kick, I'm sure, from what I've heard. I don't know.
But what about the times he was going to all these other people's houses and he still had blood on him and was he continuously on this drug bender and he was just out of his mind for all these days that he was?
Yeah, I don't know how much drugs he had.
Seems like at some point you come down and go, oh my God,
right.
What have I done?
Right.
Don't get on your knees now and say, oh, forgive me. I've killed all these people.
I don't know. He was already going to be in life in prison.
Yeah.
So it's not like he was saying, forgive me because,
Yeah.
Now, in Missouri, they were talking about the death penalty. They wanted to give him the death penalty, but for some reason it was taken off the table at that time. So he wasn't even going to get the death penalty. So yeah, I don't know. It's a sickening, like, just don't do drugs, guys.
Yeah.
Like, it's...
Say no to drugs.
Hi.
Oh, my. Well, that was terrible.
I know. I'm sorry.
That was just... I mean, I was anxious the whole time you were telling me that. I was, like, really anxious.
Because
it's just... Knowing that you could just be in from out of town, or you could just be cleaning out your car, or that is probably scarier to me. And we've talked about this before, that a crime of opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
That you could just randomly be in the Target parking lot and be abducted.
I know.
Or whatever.
Ooh, stop it.
It's just...
No, but you have to be aware of that kind of stuff. And that's why I tell my nephews and nieces, pay attention to your surroundings.
Yeah. Head on a swivel.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that was great. I feel obligated to say that was great. Let's do it again sometime. But obviously, that was not great.
Yeah.
But we'll see you next week, guys.
All right, y'all. Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. If you're enjoying our podcast, please consider leaving us a positive review and rating. To make sure you never miss an episode, subscribe to our show.
You can also follow us on Instagram at Cousins on Crime Podcast, or send case suggestions to cousinsoncrime@gmail.com.